Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
Right on point as usual, my dear. I am William Clear. This is Pop Talk and Aliens, and it is a podcast. And it's been a while since we've talked. I've taken some extra time to do a little research on this particular podcast because I'm going to tell you a great story, awesome UFO story that never gets enough play. And it's a story that I know well, but I needed to go and find the dates and timelines and get all the names and get all the facts straight so that I could deliver the goods to you unadulterated by just my own opinions and include a bunch of facts because it's important, because I don't want to try and sway you one way or the other. So I come to you with facts and facts alone. So it took a little while to research this one. I promise you it will be worth your trouble. Quick note of business, though, before we get started. I never ask you to, you know, help fund this podcast by going to, you know, I don't have any sponsors, and I tell you to go to their website and put my name in the coupon code for 10% off or anything like that. But there is something you can do for this podcast that I would greatly appreciate, and it involves spending no money. Just if you have the time and you don't mind, if you could tweet someone for me and ask them to come on the podcast. That person being a guy named Bradley Weatherholt. He did a movie that I highly recommend for anyone who loves Star Wars or even just likes Star Wars. It's called The Prequel Strike Back. And it covers the topics that I have talked about on this podcast, primarily with Charlie Crabtree, who's now, I have officially dropped his name in every episode, I think. We've talked a lot about prequel fans versus original series fan, original trilogy fans, and this movie is an amazing discussion of that. And they interview a bunch of people. They interview people from Lucasfilm. They interview Kevin Smith, a bunch of podcast people, and I really want this guy to come on. And I actually got in touch with him, and he said, yeah, I'd love to do it, but then I got to go through his publicist, and his publicist won't get back to me. So there's something you can do to help me out, and that would be to tweet this dude and just ask him, hey, when are you going on Pop Talking Aliens? Hey, you going to go on Pop Talking Aliens? That's all you got to do if you have a Twitter. His name is Bradley Weatherholt, and his Twitter ID is at Brad Weatherholt. BradWeatherholt. At Brad Weatherholt. When are you coming on Pop Talking Aliens, Brad? Just ask him, if you can. And that is the extent of my request for your help. So, let's get into this alien shit, shall we? I'm going to tell you about the Rendlesham Forest UFO sightings of 1980 in England. Britain's Roswell. Happened in Rendlesham Forest, not to be confused with Nottingham Forest from Robin Hood. Which I don't think you would, but sometimes I do for whatever reason. So there's sometimes I want to call it Nottingham Forest, but whatever. Point being, Britain's Roswell, as it's often called. And like I said, the story does not get enough play, and it hasn't over the years. So I've done episodes on regular Roswell, American Recipe, Area 51, Phoenix Lights. Those are biggies. Everybody's heard of those. This one, not so much, which is unacceptable because it's a big deal. And let me say in the beginning also that you need not know anything about UFOs, about alien sightings. You need no background. You don't have to be an enthusiast. You don't. This is just a story that stands on its own, and I highly recommend listening. And I'm not going to browbeat you, not going to lecture anything. Just here's the story as it's unfolded over the years. And a good thing to note about this one as we go through it, you'll see as we go that the main players, the witnesses to this bizarre event of possible visitation by beings from other worlds, fifth, sixth, seventh dimensions, the witnesses to this, they're all military guys, trained dudes, active in the Air Force while they saw this. And I know that this doesn't mean a lot in and of itself, because anytime a UFO sighting comes up, there's someone at some point who will always be carted out as a military expert to offer proof, quote unquote, that the thing that they saw was indisputably a UFO. But it's usually some third hand guy, you know, friend of a witness, whatever. But it always sounds credible if they say they're military or when some self-proclaimed CIA agent or ex-CIA agent comes out and spills his guts about UFOs 5 minutes before they die. You know, I played one in my one of my previous podcasts of this old, wheezing, supposed ex-CIA agent with these ridiculous stories just sitting there, nine toes into the grave, this guy, and he's just like, I saw an alien, and he was hanging out at Area 51 while I was walking around with President Eisenhower and all the world leaders, and we made a deal with the aliens that they would exchange technology. And it's just bullshit all the time. And with the actual Roswell case, the original USA, there were tons of these guys. There were tons of these dudes that they claimed to be stationed there, or they knew someone who was stationed there, and they would always say things like, you know, I wasn't there, but Bill Airborne Jones was there, and he saw aliens, and old Billy would never lie. And then the researchers go in, and you find out that there's no such person named Bill Jones who was there. But there was some guy who went by the nickname Airborne, so, you know, it must be true. There was this one guy, again, still talking about American Roswell, named Philip Corso, this ex-military former colonel, old man, came out and he wrote this book called The Day After Roswell. Ridiculous, extraordinary claims in this book. It was all about how we got all this technology from the spaceships that landed at Roswell, and it sped up all of our industry and technology. And this dude, Corso, even tricked Senator Strom Thurmond into writing the foreword for this book. And apparently, according to many accounts, Thurmond thought he was writing the foreword for something else Corso was writing that had nothing to do with UFOs. And when Senator Thurmond found out what the book was all about, he asked for the foreword to be removed, which I think it is for current and subsequent editions of that book, subsequent publications, eventually. Also about that book, it was co-written by this guy, Bill Burns, who used to host the show UFO Hunters. Like, if you've ever seen that show, he was like the old man who wore like sunglasses all the time, and he always wore a hat that said UFO Magazine, his little UFO rag magazine that he used to publish. No longer published anymore. And Bill Burns has destroyed his credibility time and time again. He's a piece of work. I mean, this is a dude who supports every UFO theory that ever lived, at least 99%. I probably will do a whole show about Bill Burns and the guys like him. But the point being, the Rendlesham Forest recollections and reports at the time are all from real military guys who were indisputably present at the time this thing happened. Multiple military personnel seeing the thing multiple times and reporting it in real time on a tape recorder. Audio, unfortunately, but I will play you some of those recordings because it's great shit, and it's one of the few times that we've ever had something like that comes from people that are likely more qualified to judge what is and what isn't a known aircraft or a lighthouse. Keep that in mind for later. Atmospheric phenomenon, whatever. Qualified people in this case. And speaking of books, there's a really good book about this Rendlesham Forest incident written by two of the military witnesses to the event and co-written by a guy named Nick Pope. Now, Nick Pope is a far cry from Bill Burns, because Nick Pope used to run the UFO project for the British Ministry of Defense. That finally stopped, I think, in the late 2000s, and he says the British government stopped investigating UFOs at that time. But he's one of the main UFO guys that gets on TV whenever there's a UFO case that's brought up or some sighting happens. That makes a lot of people write him off. So he's just in it for the money. He's a stooge. In my humble opinion, Nick Pope is one of the few guys who is actually solid in his qualifications. I mean, you don't work for the Ministry of Defense working on UFO stuff for like 20 years if you're fucking Bill Burns. So Nick Pope comes into play a couple times in this whole thing. So now you know what he's all about. Also, there's some new findings. Very recent findings in the Rendlesham incident that have come out in the last couple years. I will go over them as well when the timeline comes to that. The timeline, which starts in 1980. 3 days in 1980, December. So, Rendlesham Forest is a big pine forest east of Ipswich in England, if you're familiar with that. Ipswich does have a professional soccer team, thank you. Second division, but a team nonetheless. Has nothing to do with anything, but I figured I'd mention it because I know it. And anyway, it's close to the coast of Germany. It's on that side of England. Not close to anything else, really. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. So nearby this forest, there were twin NATO bases. It was Royal Air Force Bentwaters and Royal Air Force Woodbridge, which is where most of the action happened. So at the time, there were Americans stationed on these bases because the bases were being leased to the United States Air Force. Several UFO incidents, including multiple witness sightings, once again by legit military personnel, were reported from Rendlesham. And not just sightings. These fucking aerial phenomenon, they left traces and radioactive anomalies in the ground. So, about 3 a.m., December 1980, 26th, I believe. Yeah, day after Christmas, two military security guys saw lights descending into the Rendlesham Forest, which is about a mile from the Woodridge base that they were at. And they first, of course, thought it was a downed aircraft and went to investigate with a couple of patrolmen to cover their ass, head out there on foot. When they got close, they reported, according to all the official reports, they saw the goddamnedest thing. Strange glowing object in the woods, triangular, metallic, and approximately 3 meters across, I think 2 meters in height. So that's goddamn Europe. Hold on, I wrote down the conversion here for those of us in America. And we do have some listeners outside of America who may already know that. But anyway, you might know it too, but I'm an idiot. So here we go. The goddamn thing was 10 feet across and 6.5 feet wide and bright. The whole forest aglow with a white light. Thing had a red light on the top, blue lights on the bottom, and hovering, possibly standing on landing equipment, too dark to see, one must be fair. But as the dudes moved closer to this object, it moved away from them. And, as they said, numerous farm animals went fucking crazy, went into a frenzy. Now, of course, they reported that, and on the following morning, they went to check out the area again, see what was left over, see what had happened. Guess what? Landing marks were found in the ground near where the patrolman had first spotted the object, and burn marks on nearby trees that had been broken during the time of the landing. Not to mention, well, there were two, or I think three, depressions, little indentations from the landing gear, several inches deep. So these guys, thinking ahead very wisely, they made these plaster casts of these indentations to take them back and examine them. So they had these plaster casts and they went to study them, and eventually they were written off as animal tracks, I guess. But they didn't just call it quits there. Unlike our US of A Roswell, the Brits, they did gamma ray tests to see if there was radiation or contamination, and if so, how much was there? And there was, not a ton, but definitely a measurable amount, just away from where the ship had landed, and highest readings were right there at the location of the landing. So, they do that in the morning, and night falls again on Rendlesham Forest, and here come our uninvited guests. Uninvited, yet again, glowing objects spotted through the tree line, pulsing, red. I guess the previous night was just an opening act, because this time around, the flying fucking mystery then broke off into five different pieces and disappeared. And then after that, three more objects spotted in the north and one in the south, moving at rapid speeds. And also, as with the first, displaying red, blue lights. And the lights, as they say, would shoot all over the sky and remain visible for 1 to 3 hours. And again, multiple military guys seeing this, witnessing it firsthand, not brought in later, wheezing on a deathbed. They were there. And then, this is where the story kicks up a notch. And one of the things that really makes it different, and in many ways so much better than our Roswell, a guy named Lieutenant Colonel Charles Hult, was the base commander and a colonel on duty. While he was investigating this UFO, while it was happening on the second night, I believe, he brought a handheld little microcassette tape recorder that he had this thing lying around for dictation and, you know, translating reports, things like that. So he went into the forest with a couple other guys, who I'll get to shortly, and he recorded in real time, audio, the sighting of this UFO. Again, audio, unfortunately, no video, but it is jam-packed with drama and excitement. So I'm going to play it for a bit, and I'll let it run for a while because it's fucking fascinating. And again, this is Colonel Charles Hult, verified recording by a million sources. There's no question from military, Ministry of Defense, or anyone else that this was faked later. This happened at the time. Undisputed. Fact. So he's running around the forest. The freaky shit is happening. The blue and red lights darting all over the place, north and south, disappearing, reappearing, rapid speeds. This is how Colonel Hult described it in real time. So enjoy this for several minutes. It's great.
Okay. This is what's all off it again.
But it just moved to the right.
Yeah.
Off the right.
Strange. Well, why don't you lift? Let's approach to the edge of the woods up there. Can you undo our lights? And still carefully, come on. Okay, we're looking at the thing. We're probably about 200 to 300 yards away. It looks like an eye winking at you. It's still moving from side to side. And when you put the star scope on it, it sort of has a hollow center, a dark center. It's like a pupil of an eye looking at you and winking. And the flash is so bright to the star scope that it almost burns your eye. We passed the farmer's house and across in the next field. Now we have multiple sightings of up to 5 lights with a similar shape and all, but they seem to be steady now rather than a pulsating or glow with a red flash. We just crossed the creek. And we're getting what kind of readings now? Getting 3 good clicks on the meter, and we're seeing strange lights in the sky. At 244, we're at the far side of the second farmer's field, and made sighting again about 110 degrees. This looks like it's clear off to the coast. It's right on the horizon. Moves about a bit and flashes from time to time. Still steady or red in color. Also, after negative readings in the center of the field, we're picking up the slight readings. 4 or 5 clicks now on the meter. 305, we see strange strobe-like flashes to the rather sporadic, but there's definitely something, some kind of phenomenon. 305, at about 10 degrees horizon directly north, we've got 2 strange objects, half-moon shape, dancing about with colored lights on them, but guess to be about 5 to 10 miles out, maybe less. The half moons have now turned into full circles. As though there was an eclipse or something there for a minute or two. 3:15, now we've got an object about 10 degrees directly south, 10 degrees off the horizon. And the ones in the north are moving, one's moving away from us.
It's moving out fast.
This one on the right heading away, too.
Yeah, we're both heading north. Okay. Here he comes from the south. He's coming toward us now. Now we're observing what appears to be a beam coming down to the ground. This is unreal. 3:30, there's either 3:30, and the objects are still in the sky, although the one to the south looks like it's losing a little bit of altitude. We're turning around and heading back toward the base. The object to the south is still beaming down lights to the ground. 400 hours, one object still hovering over Woodbridge Base at about 5 to 10 degrees off the horizon, still moving erratic and similar lights and beaming down as earlier.
I love that. I love that recording. God, it makes this story so good because, again, you know, American Roswell, it's newspaper headlines, doctored photos, probably secondhand, thirdhand, fourth, fifth, sixthhand information. That happened right there in real time. And Hult, he maintains to this day that it was a spaceship of some kind. And even as recently as 2010, he issued an affidavit, notarized, in which he said, I quote, "I believe the objects that I saw at close quarter were extraterrestrial in origin, and that the security services of both the United States and the United Kingdom have attempted, both then and now, to subvert the significance of what occurred at Rendlesham Forest and RAF Bentwaters by the use of well-practiced methods of disinformation." Believe it if you will. But of course, obviously, there were detractors. Many of them. Including a guy who was once Halt's commander, who said that Halt should be ashamed of himself for suggesting that the U.S. and or U.K. would engage in some conspiracy to withhold the truth from the people. Absolutely. Of course. I mean, that shit never happens. Can you imagine? Can you imagine in your mind for just a second if a government body was involved in a conspiracy? Impossible. Just for thinking of that, shame on you. Shame on you, as this commander would say. Speaking of UK government, let's go back to Nick Pope, who I talked about earlier. Again, at the time, and for many, many years, he was the head of UFO studies at the British Ministry of Defense. After some years went by, Nick Pope and all of his investigations, where he had access to a ton of material that not everyone would have access to, he claims that he is convinced that this thing was a flying saucer. And so he went ahead and wrote a book with two of the other military people that were stationed at the base that were also firsthand witnesses, along with Charles Halt. These guys' names, John Burroughs and Jim Penniston. Again, military staff who were on duty. Burroughs, this guy was the first out of the gate and into the forest. Penniston, who was his senior, arrived later. And they went deep into the woods as this was happening. And as Burroughs stopped away from the craft, but close, Penniston walked over and fucking touched it. This is the best part. This is like out of Close Encounters, right? Both these guys said later that they became obsessed with the sighting. Penniston, this dude, Jim Penniston, he couldn't sleep for days, and he eventually got it, like, he got a notebook out and he just started scribbling ones and zeros all the time. Just like binary code, random binary code that he couldn't stop doing. He was compelled to write this, and he was also compelled to return to the landing site. He was the guy who found the impressions in the ground and had the plaster casts made of them. So you know what? Let's play it. Let's listen to a little bit of Jim Penniston talking about his crazy-ass binary code.
Was it like a telepathic download? I mean, do you have any conscious memory of it? How it?
Oh, it absolutely was telepathic. It wasn't like I could see it in front of me, like visually. It was. It was like it was a pictorial that was running a movie in my brain. You know, it was in a mind's eye kind of thing. I couldn't physically actually see something, no. And it was flashings of zeros and ones. And later we find out it's some type of binary code, which I, be honest with you, I have trouble with algebra. Or I'm not a math person by no means, let alone computers. And in 1980, I don't think we even had computers that we used, so it was foreign. I did record the glyphs at the scene, but when I went home in the following day, I can't get these images. I mean, they're just like there, ones and zeros, 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 zeros. They're all in my head. So I felt compelled to write them down. So I grabbed my notebook, flipped it open, and then I did the most crazy thing I thought in the world. I wrote these ones and zeros all the way down. It's like 12, 14 pages of them. And anyway, at a certain point, when I got done, I had no more imaging. Now, I'm not at the craft, I'm at home. I go back to Ipswich, and this is where this is happening. And then once I'd done it, though, the imaging was gone. So I thought, great. Now, can I tell somebody that I went and received imaging in my living room at home in Ipswich, and I had to write them down, and I'm okay now? I did not tell anybody that happened.
Now the next question obviously being, was the binary code ever translated? Yes, although hard to know where fact and fiction lies within this, but one of the issues was that Penniston didn't make the binary code available for experts to translate for many, many years. But basically what it says, apparently, is it gives a lot of coordinates. And it does say something about exploration of humanity. And it gives coordinates of these different locations that ostensibly the aliens are going to visit, like Sedona, Arizona, the Great Pyramids, things like that. And it says like end date 8100, whatever that means to them or us. But a lot of controversy about that. Who's decoded it, what it means. Then Peniston says, well, I don't think that's the right decoding. So, you know, once again, the story gets all fucked up. But it's one of the things that when debunking the Rendlesham Forest incident, you never hear. One of the things that is unfortunate, and again, this is something that happens in all of the UFO cases, Peniston, his story with the ones and zeros and all that becomes a bit more lavish over the years after numerous interviews. And that's such a son of a bitch with these UFO cases. There's always more that these people seem to remember years after they initially saw this thing. And the human memory is extremely touchy. And we all know, if you think about like a scene from a movie that you saw 15 years ago, and those 15 years go by, and you think of it once in a while, and then all of a sudden you see that movie again, and you're like, oh my God, that's not the line he said. That scene took place in the daytime, and I always imagine it at night. That's the kind of thing that the human memory does. And this dude, instead of just sticking to the same story, he apparently, you know, started to expand it. But for whatever he may say now, he claimed at the time that he touched the goddamn thing. And he reported at the time that it had weird symbols on it and that the craft was hot as fuck, almost burned him. And the glyphs, little hieroglyphic things that he drew along with his ones and zeros, the glyphs were surprisingly similar to the ones that were reported from American Roswell. Jesse Marcel Jr. with his little I-beam, he would always draw these symbols on and say that's what it looked like. And of course, those were written off as imprints from kids' toy tape that leaked onto the wood of the balloon and that crazy story. Check out my Roswell podcast for more of that. It's fucking ridiculous. But for the Rendlesham incident, the ship, or whatever, didn't crash. So they couldn't keep any of the stuff. They couldn't grab an I-beam or two and look at the carvings in detail. So he just drew pictures of these things. Oh, and by the way, his drawings, the drawings he made of these glyphs at the time, as well as his fucking weird notebooks with all the ones and zeros, you can see those online, easily found. So, you know, if you want to check it out, search Peniston drawings, Rendlesham Forest, and feast your eyes. But there may be other possibilities. So yes, now the other side. The debunking, or so-called. The most common explanation for this whole thing, a lighthouse that lived nearby. Right? I mean, it didn't live there, but, you know, a lighthouse that existed nearby. Lighthouses don't live. But the lighthouse is on the coast a few miles from the forest. So as the years went by and this incident was investigated time and time and time again, this debunking group got a hold of some guy who lived nearby when this whole Rendlesham Forest thing happened. This Forrester. No relation to the great character actor Robert Forrester. This English Forrester living by Rendlesham Forest plotted a map of the direction in which the airmen reported seeing their flashing UFO. And his conclusion is that they were staring straight into the lighthouse beam. Now, is that really it? This guy, this Forrester, Thurkettle is his real name, took some investigators to the forest in 1983, 3 years after the sighting, took these debunkers up to the site after midnight. Now, at this point, when he took them there, the forest had been cleared of tons of trees, just as apparently normal forest operations. So there were just a few pine trees that remained at the edge of the forest, and according to this forester guy, Thurkettle, even though the setting was completely different than it was when the sightings happened 3 years before, he says the existing pine trees, the ones that are left, more than enough to showcase the lighthouse excuse. his conclusion is that if there was a UFO, then the military people would have seen the UFO and the lighthouse, and they would have reported a different number of lights. But because of the number of lights they reported, he claims all lighthouse, all the time. Everything they saw was directly a result of that lighthouse. But radiation, depressions in the ground, burnt bark on the trees near the landing, well, the forester's got his reasons again. Thurkettle, dude's got explanations for this too. Some of it. Being an apparently elite forester, he looked at all the shit at the landing site, and he concluded that the three depressions, the indentations in the ground, were irregular in shape enough and didn't form a symmetrical triangle, and so they could have been nothing more than rabbit diggings. And the burn marks on the trees, axe cuts in the bark, made by the foresters themselves to mark that the trees were ready to be chopped down. So the investigators that were working with this guy, they also claimed that they saw other similar quote-unquote burn marks within the pine bark resin that kind of bubbled into the cut and gives the impression of a burn, but it's not really. You know, again, for what it's worth, let's remember that this is 3 years later. You know, when these dudes did their investigation, they weren't exactly hot on the scene. But the most interesting thing they said was regarding the radiation findings that the military found the day after the incident. About those radiation findings, these investigators said nothing. No mention. The drawings, physical sighting, ones and zeros freak out, nothing, skip it. Didn't gel with the lighthouse narrative. Which, by the way, again, to be fair, local police also support the lighthouse theory. I don't know that they were there at the time. From everything I've read, they were not. But they claim their expertise as policemen allows them to declare that the lighthouse made weird optical illusions. You know, they'd seen weird stuff before. Case closed, no harm, no foul. This is the kind of thing that boggles my mind. You go out and you look at a forest that's totally sparser than it was 3 years ago. You watch a fucking lighthouse, you look at trees, and you take as gospel everything that one forester says put up against multiple military people, the British Ministry of Defense, and lighthouse guy comes in, the whole game's over, right? Exposed. Ah, this frustrates me so much. No mention of radiation, of the guy touching the fucking hot-ass UFO or whatever it was. Just lights in the trees would have been the lighthouse, so shut up about it. That's fairness. That's good fairness from the investigators. Thorough work. I applaud your work. But on the other hand, the people that always push this case as a UFO are no better. They are no fairer than these debunker guys. And here's a good example. There's this website where there's all this, you know, Rendlesham Forest true evidence type of thing. I forget the name of the site, but you can Google it. You'll find it. The best thing ever is on this website. So these UFO guys, up on the top navigation menu of their homepage, there's like 10 links to different reports, right? Witness testimonies, a bunch of stuff. Proof, proof, proof. Click here for proof. Click here for more proof. And then, though, there's one link near the bottom that says other possibilities. So ostensibly, you know, you're going to click a link and see some other people's opinions. But when you click the link for other possibilities, a new page opens that's just blank. Nothing at all. So these guys believe there are zero possibilities besides spaceship. And they get, you know, total in your face with it by making the effort to create a page that they link to that says other possibilities. It has no content whatsoever. So, two sides of this thing, neither one willing to give ground as usual, which is why I'm here. Which is why I'm telling you the story, to give you the whole thing. Do with this information as you will. But, even though at that point, you know, you think case closed, UFO people say zero possibility of any alternative, debunkers say, you know, lights in the forest, pine trees, weird effects, there's recent updates. In 2005, the Forestry Commission in England used lottery proceeds, people buying lottery tickets. They took some of the proceeds and they created a trail in Rendlesham Forest because of the public interested in UFOs and everything. and they nicknamed it the UFO Trail. You can actually go, you know, if you're in the middle of fucking nowhere and you get lost between Cambridge and Ipswich, you can go to the Rendlesham Forest. And in 2014, they sweetened the deal by commissioning an artist to create these works that have been installed at the end of the trail that are modeled after the sketches that purportedly resent some of the versions of the UFO that was claimed to be seen. So you can go and, you know, have a Rendlesham Forest UFO sighting reenactment if you're ever in that part of Great Britain. And there's more, though. 2015, as recent as 2015, a guy uploaded a video to YouTube of these weird-ass lights jumping around right over that same forest, in the sky, in the clouds. There, in the beginning of the clip, there's a helicopter that's traveling, at least on the screen, he's traveling to the left. And then as the lights come, it appears that the helicopter gets freaked out and it turns around and it hauls ass away in the other direction. You can check it out for yourself. The video is called UFO Sighting Over Rendlesham Forest, and it was uploaded in 2015. The thing that comes into mind is that recordings, video recordings of UFOs these days, who knows? After Effects, things like that, that's powerful software, and shit can be faked by a 10-year-old at this point. But this story was actually reported in reputable UK newspapers, so again, do what you will with that. Take a look if you'd like. Draw your conclusions. More updates. This year, as of this broadcast, 2016, two military technicians that were reportedly on base at the time, while it happened, have come forward and said that the UFO was actually caught on radar at the base at the time this was happening. Lighthouse lights don't get caught on radar. Just saying. Now, this evidently, these people haven't come out until now. I'm not sure exactly of their qualifications, but apparently they have been vetted. They were there, and they've come out on this recently. Even though, I don't know, that's always kind of suspect when people come out so late. You know, getting back to Mr. Wheezy, ex-CIA guy, and Boyd Bushman, another one of those guys who claimed to be ex-CIA, came out right before his death. But we had two of those guys, both claiming that they saw things that really couldn't possibly be verified to have seen. But these two operations guys in the military, they apparently were there, and they say caught it on radar. So again, you know, there's reasonable doubt when this stuff comes out this many years later, but apparently there's a film being made about these people's testimony. And I have not been able to find it. I looked hard during my research, but if and when I do, and if it's worth a fuck, I'll definitely do a follow-up about it. Another thing to mention, earlier I said that Colonel Holt, the guy who made the recordings, he was thrown under the bus by his commanding officer. Remember, he said he should be ashamed of himself, and so should you for believing this shit. It's important to know that same commanding officer said on record that he still doesn't know what the goddamn lights were. Theodore Comrade is his name, and his words, in the final analysis, the Rendlesham Forest lights remained unexplained. I think they're explainable, but not with the information we've been able to gather. And my friends, this is one of, if not the key difference between this and the regular Roswell Phoenix lights. This one does not have a solid debunk. Outside of the lighthouse story, which, come on, these dudes, they describe some wild shit about lights breaking up and moving around, an actual spaceship, red, blue, green lights darting all over the place, rapid speeds once again, and radiation found at the scene the next day. And apparently that is, you know, not enough information to go by, which maybe it isn't. But the lighthouse story clearly is not being bought by everyone. It's not like the weather balloon in regular Roswell where it's like, you know, all right, well, fair enough, weather balloon. Yeah, they couldn't tell us what it was for until 50 years later, so yeah, we get it. All right, it was a Russian spy satellite, and okay, that makes sense to a lot of people. It makes sense to me if you put it all together. It still doesn't quite add up for me, but at least you can put a bow on American Roswell. You can do no such thing with Rendlesham Forest. No such thing. And so until they come out with something better than the fucking lighthouse My mind remains open. So in my final analysis, I say jury out, unsolved. Highly detailed, witnesses still alive, unwilling to budge on the fact that they believe they saw the real fucking deal, my friends. In December, just after Christmas, 1980, in a lonely, spooky forest in England. Rendlesham Forest. Ones and zeros, darting lights. A forester who has an explanation for it all. And nuclear radiation left behind that still has not been explained. It's a lot to unpack. But no one, at least at any point, has claimed that it was a weather balloon. Cue the hot chick.
Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.